Good evening, folks. This is Carolyn Evers. And you probably have guessed already, my special friend that I brought along since it's Saturday.
Good evening, Carolyn. Good evening, everyone. It's Richard here. Back from Aussie, getting over my jet lag.
Yeah, you did a bit of flying lately, haven't you?
I did. Added a visit to Hong Kong on the way back, just in case I wasn't sure I had enough jet lag.
Yep, he's back. Anyway, for those of you who get our, I was going to say newsletter, but what I really wanted to say is have signed up to get information about our radio shows and so forth, you would know. What are we talking about today, Richard?
Oh, I think you're doing the talking today, Carolyn, actually.
Sort of like a continuation from the last time the two of us were on board.
Really? You were in such fine fettle last time that there's probably about four shows you could make of your story. But there were a few things that you identified that, as we were reflecting on it afterwards, that we, I think, both felt could be some value in you discussing further. And I think your starting point was Sean's passing, if I recall.
Yes. First of all, before we get into that, I just want to mention that one of the reasons why I feel like these stories are important to people is because I went through the same process as many of you are going through. Sort of like you might say psychic things happen to you. You really don't have anybody to talk to about it. There's a bit of confusion around it. And as your gifts start to open, most of us really don't have someone to be a mentor. And I wanted to bring forth some of these stories for some of those reasons. And then the other thing is these stories really, in my opinion, help us to understand that we are such a planning person, individual soul. In other words, these sorts of things are planned before we come. And I think if we're going to mention one thing about that, it's something else that people really don't understand. And when my son died, it was, as anybody can imagine, who's a parent in particular, it was one of the saddest times in my life. And yet, as things turned out, I found out that we had agreed to come together. He had agreed to cross over. And the reason for all of that was he was helping me to become integrated in so much of this work that I started to do. And it gave me a place to actually trust somebody. Such wide things had opened for me that I don't think I would have trusted if I didn't feel like my son was leading me there. And that was the reason why we did it this way. And so bringing this forth, I think, might help the listeners. If they've had some tragic things happen in their lives, there might be something much broader behind it, much broader than the current activity in your life. So I wanted to bring that forth because as human beings, we don't remember that planning stage. But if you're aware that perhaps there is something greater, perhaps there is something that you had planned to do, it might help you awaken to that point and you might say take over your life again. So that being said, I wanted to start with the work that I had done with Sean, how I began things, you might say. And I had a friend who had some psychic ability, and the interesting thing was her name was Carol also. We were Carol and Carol. And she was having dinner at my house, my apartment one night. And I had something in the hall closet that just kept falling off. We would hear this noise, we would go in, and there would be this package that was up on the shelf in the closet would be lying on the floor. So this happened a few times, which was very strange because there wasn't anything up there where it could slip off. And so she knew from her own experiences that there was a spirit in the house trying to get our attention. And when we went to sit down, she saw my son coming, and he came in a large blue bubble, came out of the bubble with a whole bunch of friends. And I said to her, well, that sounds like something he would do, because he was a real people person. And if you can imagine this, grieving, my son just crossing over, and here was this woman telling me she saw him. And not only did she see him, but she took my hand and said, this is where his face is. And I put my hand on his cheek, and I had all this energy that I received and his love. It was quite an experience. You there, Richard?
I am. I'm just spellbound with this, because I haven't heard this story in this detail. I've heard little pieces of it, but it's amazing. I'm sitting here spellbound. Continue on.
Yeah. And so that started this interaction with him. And it was about not long after that I started communicating with him. Actually, if I would have been trained by you, Richard, with the right brain magic session, I could have started right away communicating with him.
I think Caroline did a pretty good job myself.
So I had to start that. I had to learn how to use my right brain, the side of my right brain, and begin to speak with him. Well, one of the things that he did continuously, he would send a red bird. And, of course, these red birds were not common in the area where I was living. And he would send this red bird, and it pecked at my window. I would be sitting at my desk working, and this bird would sit on the windowsill and peck away. It sounded like a machine gun. It was amazing. And my other son and my daughter-in-law would come in to visit, and there would be this red bird just pecking away. He would look up at us, and he would keep pecking. And Sean said to me, I'm sending him to you, so you know it's me. Feed him. So I'd sit at my desk, and there would be this bird just pecking away. And so he did lots of things like that. I would have little things show up in my life where he would try to communicate in some way that I would know that he was with me working in some fashion. And I remember the first time I went on a trip after that, I had gotten a lot of information that I had spoken in a handheld recorder, which was really interesting. That every night when I would go to sleep, I would take this recorder with me. See, I didn't know at that time how to get into an altered state. No one, as I said, taught me anything, and it was kind of difficult to open up these doorways. And I must say to those who are listening to this, who are interested in it, Richard and I have learned so much about entrance into the world of spirit, speaking to people on the other side. And for those of you who are interested in it, we can show you some things that we have learned. And as I said, Richard does a wonderful job with the right brain magic. But I had to open up these doors myself, and it wasn't an easy thing because, as I said, no one really, I didn't have anybody in my life that could teach me these things. And so I didn't know how to get into an altered state and receive information from the other side. But what I did was, which was kind of interesting, is I realized that when I was drifting off to sleep, that I was disconnecting from some of the signals in your waking state. And I took a handheld recorder, and as I would go to sleep, I would speak into it. And I had tapes and tapes and tapes of all kinds of really spiritual information that was coming in from the other side. And it would have been a whole lot easier if I had just known how to do that. I would go to a library looking for something. And this was really interesting because there would be books and videos as I would walk down the aisle that would literally fall off the shelves. And I suspect it must have been Sean doing that. I would pick things up and it was like the next step in where I needed to go. The door just opened. It was really quite amazing. Can you imagine that, Richard, walking down the aisle of a library and just having things jump off the shelf at your feet? Well,
it would be pretty unexpected. I must say, you know, I hear these stories of books falling off shelves, and it hasn't been my experience, but when it keeps happening to you, you know, you kind of begin to wonder what's going on, I have to say.
Yeah. Incredible. What was in these books and tapes was the scientific explanations for the information that I was receiving psychically.
Interesting.
So, yeah, yeah. And that has been one of the hallmarks of what I have done. The information that I receive, I research it and find a place where a scientist or some point in history had corroborated the story that I received.
Well, I think one of the strong examples of that was the story you were telling last time about checking out the silks and the color of that silk that Julia showed herself to you wearing.
Indeed. The whole thing seems so outlandish to me that I thought, if I don't have something that can explain this to me, to corroborate it to me, how would anybody else believe what I was saying? And so I learned about the Silk Road. We mentioned this the last time because I thought this was quite interesting, how silk was carried by camel. Some group would carry it to a certain point, turn it over to someone else. And so silk would be purchased and ordered, actually, in China, and it would go from one caravan to another until it wound up in Rome. I didn't know about that. I didn't even know that silk was worn by the Romans. I thought it was mostly the sort of like I guess they probably used flax or a cotton-like garment that the senators wore. But the ladies were wearing the silks, and like we said, the colors that I saw that in was actually, I found how they dyed it and used that color. So wherever I could, I corroborated everything that I received because, first of all, I wanted people to believe what I was doing, but secondly, I didn't want to mislead anybody. And so that was another thing that was behind what I was doing. I didn't want to lead anybody astray. I wanted to make sure that what I was telling was actually the truth. And so
it is a challenge in this kind of work, you know. Is it real or is it not? Are you making all this stuff up? Where is it coming from? And from me, I mean, working with Carolyn, who has such a track record, I suppose, in doing this was an enormous gift. And in a way, her ability to do this was part of what had us connect, you might say, in this work, because I remember joining her Archangel Michael calls. I think they were the only ones she was doing at that time. And being able to ask a question of Archangel Michael through Carolyn, and I, to be honest, can't even remember what the question was or what the answer was. I just remember being absolutely shell-shocked by the answer that came back, which was so clearly about me, and I knew Carolyn didn't know anything about me in terms of the detail of the question that I had asked, and so this answer came back, which was just undeniable. And I still remember that shock of that answer as it kind of hit me. It was incredible.
You know, Richard, I think one of the most important things with people who are receiving information from the other side is trust. And when I started to do this research and corroborate information that I was receiving, I was building up a sense of trust about what I was doing. And I don't remember the question either. I do remember you asking it. And I just told you the answer that I was hearing. And that really comes from a deep-seated trust as to what you're doing. And I think it's one of the most important things when you're trying to do work like this, bringing in information from the other side, that it's extremely, I would say that it's almost impossible to do it unless you really trust what you're doing. And I think you have found that with the Right Brain Magic work that you do.
Yes. For sure. And the work that we do on these radio shows often also.
Yeah. And so people who feel that they have a calling to do this, if you don't have trust, you're not going to be able to do it. It's an extremely important aspect, a key to working with information from the other side and from the masters. And getting back to Sean, because I think he really helped me to trust. And the first trip that I went on with some friends was to Sedona, which, by the way, is a gorgeous place. And I didn't know about energy work, but I was there bringing in energy from the higher realms down to the earth. And he took me on a trip, and he showed me. By this time, I was starting to see him, see the things that he was working with. And he showed me a little toy that he just loved as a child. It was one of these little pool toys with a mother duck and all the little goslings behind it. And when you'd pull the string, it had like arms that were on the duck. It would make a noise and these things would spin around, and he just loved it. And that's what he did. He showed me this little toy, and I was to follow.
That's funny.
It is. I was so intrigued by that. How could a mother not follow what she thought was a child leading her with a toy? But he did a lot of those things. I was so easy for me to trust this because, you know, here he was. I knew it was my son. I couldn't imagine anybody else knowing about that toy that he used as a young child. So that was like the big door that opened up through my son. And as I said earlier, if you've got something in your life that is tragic, there might just be a gift behind that. And one needs the courage to be able to look beyond the current event that's happening in your life, because it might be part of a much bigger picture. Then, as I started to come through this pathway, I remember the first time I saw Richard's picture. I saw his, I'm trying to think, where did I see that, Richard? Did you have it on a web page or something?
Oh, I can't remember. It might have been associated with my ebook or something. I can't remember where it was. It's a long time ago.
But I saw his picture, and as soon as I saw his picture, I hadn't met him at this time. Matter of fact, I don't even think we were having conversations with one another, but I saw your picture, Richard, and I knew when I saw it that there was a connection between the two of us. I didn't know what it was, but, and that's another thing that you have said many times, trust your intuition, because it was my intuition flagging me that here was a person that I remembered. I didn't know where, didn't know how. I just knew when I saw that picture that there was something between us. And as I started remembering all these past lifetimes, my golly, did we have lifetimes together.
I think it's funny. Carolyn remembers these things. I don't have a clue. You know, I hear these stories as we've kind of gone along and, you know, in various ways have had them validated. But, you know, watching Carolyn recall these things is just quite amazing, really.
Well, one of the things that I remembered, I always knew, even before I started doing this work, that I had died in the Roman Colosseum. I just knew it. Matter of fact, some of the people that we work with, Richard, they'll say that very same thing to you. You know, I just knew it.
Yep.
And that was Richard with me. Like you say, you don't remember, but you were a Roman soldier. I was one of those newfangled Christians that they were starting to understand. And you warned me about leaving, that it would be dangerous to stay there as a Christian. And I couldn't leave. I had a lot of people that I had made connections with, and I couldn't leave them. And so the Christians were gathered up and put into the Colosseum. And I remembered that. It was so lifelike to me to see the lions come at me. And you were there. You were caught up in that too. You wouldn't leave me, Richard. And when the lions attacked, you tried to protect me. And some of the things that have happened to us in life, in real life, was just so desperate, so emotionally filled. And there were some Christians that were tied to poles in the Colosseum, and the lions attacked them too. And I remember seeing that moment when I died. In other words, if you can imagine the trauma to have a lion jump upon you, and you knew what was going to happen, you saw how they tore apart other people's bodies, and there you are, you knew it's going to happen to you. And so it is this terrible trauma at that moment when you know you're going to be about to die. And when you do die, there is a peace. And I want to tell people this, because to go from this terrible, traumatic time to step across to the other side, there is this beautiful peace. And it was interesting, too, because when I stepped across to the other side, the souls, the individuals that were tied to these posts, they were standing in those same positions. And it was extremely dramatic. And then we were both standing on the other side, you and I. And I, at that moment, the two of us went to the center of the cosmos. And we were going back to Prime Creator. We were explaining what had happened, because it was one of those times, Richard, when we had come to bring forth or help to bring forth a golden age, and it didn't happen. And when we went to the center of the cosmos, it was like we landed on this platform and we walked into this brilliant white light. So if you have loved ones who are approaching death and they're frightened, because many people are frightened at that, you can tell them this story. There is this brilliant peace. It is completely different. It is the moment when you're going home.
Amazing. It's hard to imagine that in this consciousness, in this world that we live, that that transition could be really a liberation. And yet, yes, that's really what it is.
Indeed. I think the last time that we did this, Richard, I had spoken a lot about Julia and her father, Julius Caesar, and some of the difficulties that she had being his daughter. But
sweet, shy, retiring character that he was.
Oh, yes. I remember when he would walk into a room. He would walk into a room. I just get so amazed when I see these movies where they are depicting him. There is nothing like what this man was like. I haven't seen anything on a screen on a movie screen that even comes close to what this man was like. He could walk into a room filled with people. They could all be chatting, doing whatever they wanted to do, and there was something electric about his presence, because everybody would stop and look at him. He was not a person who would walk into a room unnoticed. He had this dramatic sense about him. Whether you loved him or hated him, you could not miss his entrance in any room. And so I had learned all of what he was responsible for. Again, you were in that life. You were the love of my life. And he was responsible for causing your death. There was an amazing story behind that, that, as you know, I have written, and someday hope to have this on, see this on the screen, because it's a tremendous movie. And after writing all that, going through all the emotions of what it was like to find you, to lose you, the love of my life, he came to me. Julius Caesar came to me. And I, in the midst of all this, even though he had done all the things that he had done to me, I had this compassion for him. I forgave him. And what he told me was he needed my forgiveness to release him from the Bardo. And I didn't know what the Bardo was, but it was forbidden that he tell me that he needed that forgiveness of him. And I found this very fascinating about the Bardo. He was responsible for, oh, how shall I say this? He did a lot of things wrong. He did some things right. He did some things wrong. And people who are responsible for, what shall I say, a great failing upon earth, what the Bardo is, it's a place where they cannot be released from until it's time to be released. And what this is they go over every event in their life. Imagine going over every event in your life, searching what you did wrong, what you did right. It was a very close examination. And the things that you did wrong, you had to repair in some fashion. And he came to me trying to, in some way, repair what he had done to me to seek my forgiveness. It was the last thing that he had to do to be released from the bardo. And when he was released, when I did forgive him, he was released. And the joy in that. So, you know, Caesar lived 2,000 years ago. And in our time, I'm not quite so sure what it would be like in his time, but he was going over every deed that he had ever experienced and was finally released.
It's a very interesting story that you had to forgive him of your own volition in this lifetime to release him as a result of what he had done in that lifetime, yet you didn't have any knowledge of how that worked. Very interesting.
Well, the first thing he did when he was released from the bardo, his first wife, you might say, was his soulmate, and she was waiting for him. And when he was released, they joined together in great joy. And the first thing that they did was they went to the center of the cosmos, and he would tell me what life was like. In other words, Prime Creator is in the center of the cosmos, and he wanted to see life from that point of view. And from the center of the cosmos, he could look out, and whatever he concentrated on, that information would come to him. It's like, this is what Prime Creator sees. And so he would search. He would see events anywhere in the cosmos that he wished to see. And he would come back and tell me about it, what it was like.
Fascinating.
I thought it was. And so what I have learned is that there are some souls that they travel together through not only all of their lifetimes on Earth, but on the other side. They still have these relationships. Now, I'm not saying that everybody does, but there are some souls that do have this relationship, that their whole journey flows together.
Interesting.
It's like you and I. I mean, I remember so many lifetimes that we have had together. I have spoken of a few. I think one that really sticks out, and maybe it has an effect on you too, Richard, I'm not sure, but when we were Templars, so much of what we did that I think was important, we did it as Templars. Well, that's not exactly true. Perhaps Atlantis is important too, but from the point of view of a Templar, there was so much that happened during that period of time when the Templars were working on Earth.
Yes, it was certainly a very important time. And, I think there's plenty of people who think I've not yet put my sword down, but...
Yeah, you're still wielding that sword. Something that we really haven't explored, Richard, but we know from history that first group of Templars that formed, they left France and went to Jerusalem to Solomon's Temple. You know a little bit of the history of that.
I do, a little. But you're doing a wonderful job. No. It is interesting how that group went there. History says, you know, to go digging for something. What was it, 7 years they were there? Something like that. And what we've come to understand is that it wasn't really Solomon's temple that they were after. It was information that was held on the columns in particular, but maybe other things also, of a temple that was on that site prior to Solomon's temple that actually was built in the time of Atlantis, a vehicle, if you will, by which key information could be transferred from Atlantis into that moment in time. And so there was that initial group of Templars that went there to gather that information. And some of that was information about sacred geometry. Some of that information was what was used to be able to build the Gothic cathedrals, not just the geometric information, but indeed the knowledge of how to move those blocks of stone like they were feathers and to mold them, you know, in a soft form, which is a little hard to imagine, but there's plenty of evidence elsewhere of humanity's ability to do that in the past. So that knowledge was held in that Atlantean temple. And so a group of the early Templars gathered in that form. And one of the things that's come forth actually from the Soul Origin and History readings is that one of those original Templars actually did not reincarnate, but actually returned to join, and so returned with full memory and so on, which is kind of interesting. It was clearly a pretty important point in the unfolding of events, you might say.
What that is an illustration of, Richard, is that the light would work with gifts, and when the dark was at the point where they were trying to control them, you might say that information went underground to be retrieved later.
Yes.
Yeah. And so this is what happened with the sinking of Atlantis. It was a plan whereby this information could be transferred from Atlantis to the time of the Templars, and it was hidden that long. Did you want to add anything to that?
I don't think so. I think that's the essence of it. Anything you wanted to add to it, Carolyn?
Well, just that what we have found is that a person will have a certain mission, and if that mission is interfered with in some manner, a person will reincarnate later, and you might say pick up the threads and take it up to the next level.
Yes.
Which I find interesting.
It is interesting. Yes, it's as we live life in this dimension, it's difficult to grasp how much planning goes into not just one particular lifetime, but the unfolding of many lifetimes, you might say. This planning that goes into a particular lifetime reflects that history very often. Yet as we live life for the most part, we have no clue about that. And, you know, I mean, in some examples, in some cases, people have remembered these things as they've gone forward. But given, if you will, the parameters, the restrictions around how things work in this consciousness, we forget all that stuff when we come in. It's bizarre, really. I think it's bizarre.
Well, taking that into consideration, it's one of the reasons why our soul journey, the work that we do with the Journey of the Soul and the other, I can't think of the website, Richard, the Key Past Lifetimes.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm.
And I would say that the soul journey has been very helpful to people for that very reason, that they haven't remembered what they've done in the past, and the same way with the Key Past Lifetime. And they meet the individuals that they were in the past, and it helps them to, what you might say, continue that path again in this lifetime where it was interrupted.
It is fascinating how those key past life sessions unfold, how a particular soul aspect comes forth and connects with them in this life. It's beautiful. And really, you know, agrees to work with them going forward usually, so that whatever it is, whatever knowledge or wisdom that that soul aspect is carrying is then transferred to that individual for them to work with in this lifetime. It's fascinating stuff.
Was there any example that comes to mind?
My knee is stretching me.
You're not going to sit there with your hands in your pocket.
I must say I recall the soul origin and history reading information much better, but there have been many examples like that. For example, I remember one was this woman was an earth goddess in a past life, and so she carried a lot of knowledge of working with the earth and so on, and was looking to share that with the individual in this lifetime so they could kind of pick up the threads of that work and do it in this time. So that's one that comes to mind when you stretch me.
Yes, I do find that fascinating where an individual, we don't map out who they're to meet. It is the soul that chooses the lifetime. And the person that came from their monad in that particular lifetime connects with them and teaches them. How beautiful is that? That these individuals have a teacher, and the teacher turns out to be the soul that they were in another lifetime. It's amazing.
Really?
Interestingly, we've had a lot of people who shared that life with Yeshua.
Yes.
And they are always amazing. If you have a feeling that perhaps you lived during the lifetime of Yeshua, you probably did.
Well, part of that, too, is because so many of the people that we work with are incarnated cherubim, and most of the Essenes were incarnated cherubim. So, you know, that's kind of how that comes to be so much with the people that we work with.
Well, one of the things that comes to mind that I think is very fascinating is that story in the Bible where Yeshua actually walks upon the water. There was some of his, well, we call them apostles, but they looked at Yeshua as a friend. And they were out fishing, and a storm came up. And the storms would come up on the lake were could be very serious in a small boat. And the apostles were quite alarmed. And Yeshua is up on a hill, and he sees this happening. And he walks down to the water's edge, and he starts to walk over the water to where the boat where the apostles are. And when I was bringing this forth for this individual, what was so fascinating about that is I could see where the water underneath his feet actually changed and became solid. In other words, he had control over the electrons so that what water was became solid, and I could see it under his feet.
It's amazing the skill you have in your clairvoyant skills are just extraordinary.
And when he got out to the boat, the one that we know of as Peter was in the boat, and he called Peter. He actually tamed the storm, and he called Peter to get out of the boat with him. I don't think this part's in the Bible. And he held on to Peter's hand, and Peter believed in him. And he started walking with Yeshua on top of the water. And Yeshua decided that he was trying to teach Peter. And he decided that he would let go of his hand and allow Peter to stand there by himself on top of the water. And Peter started to sink beneath the waves. And the fascinating thing is, when we did this reading for Peter in this lifetime, he remembered that event. And he remembered that he didn't have enough faith. And that is why he started slipping beneath the waves. You know, that's a very fascinating thing, too, that I think that people have reincarnated. And when we bring up an individual story that happened in their past, the people start to remember it.
Indeed. Well, I think one of the most fascinating was the experience of the house that you described in in Atlantis. And the woman whose house it was in that lifetime not only could also remember that house, she thought it was in Greece or somewhere, she didn't know where it was. Not only that, but she could not only remember the things that Carolyn was describing, but could also smell the smells of the flowers and so on that were around that house. It was so vivid in her memory. Quite fascinating. Quite fascinating.
Yeah, it's really a blessing for us, too, when we connect people to a past lifetime like this and they remember it.
Yes. Yes, it's pretty special.
Indeed it is. And something else that I think is very special is when we work with a person and we connect them to somebody on the other side, a loved one who has crossed over, and they are able to share that time with them and learn how to connect with them in the future. And I'm thinking about this one particular story, Richard, and I don't know if you recall this, where it was, but it was the late, what web page it's on, but it was the lady who connected with her brother.
Yes, it is on the Right Brain Magic site. And maybe
is it?
Somewhere else also, yes. Rightbrainmagic.com. Where Katie, I think her name was connecting with her brother. And she experienced him then bringing forth, she came from quite a large family, and quite a number of them had crossed over at various points, and he brought the whole bunch of them, and she was just blown away by this experience, just extraordinary.
Before we get to that, though, one of the things that I wanted to mention is I found so extraordinary is she connects with her brother, and I said to her, "What's your brother doing?" And she says, "He's running." And I said, "Well, why is he running?" And he was running because he was a paraplegic on this side when he was living. And he was trying to show her the joy that he felt by being free and able to move around. And the beauty of it is, if you go to that site and we had permission from her to put this up so you can hear it. If you go to that site and you hear her voice as to how she is, what shall we say, touched, her feelings, what she's going through when she's talking to her brother, the amazement of what she sees and what he tells her, and then, as you say, the amazement of when he brings all of the family members that have crossed over to connect with her. It's worth going to that page just to hear her response to all of that.
Yes.
It's not something you will easily forget.
No, we don't forget it.
I don't think people who hear it forget it either. Richard, can you believe that we have 5 minutes left of the show?
I could believe that, Carolyn. I could believe that.
We still have a lot of lifetimes down here to talk about.
So what's the last one that you would like to talk about?
Gee, I don't know. I don't know if it's a particular lifetime I wanted to talk about, or well, I think I'm going to mention something that perhaps we didn't even discuss before we did this show. And you touched on it earlier about how people had the secret of being able to make a stone, to change the structure of a stone so that it is like liquid and move at great distances. And did you want to comment a little on that?
No. What did you have in mind, Carol? I mean, I think it's an extraordinary thing, and it's one of those things that has been forgotten, you might say. It's one of the skills that we've had in the past that has been lost. And though there are examples of it still in existence, because it's one of the things that David Wilcock actually discussed. I think the book's called Sourcefield Investigations, and he talks about someone recording this in Tibet, that they still have the knowledge of how to do this.
Oh, that's interesting.
And, of course, this individual who had filmed this had that film confiscated. You know, the powers that be do not want this kind of knowledge in the hands of Joe Average, like so many other things are kept under the wraps. But it's a knowledge that really, you know, for the most part has been lost. And it's very clear that with the use, particularly use of sound in particular, the right kind of combinations of sound, that stones can be rendered weightless and soft. Hard to imagine. And yet there are those massive walls in South America, for example, in Bolivia and elsewhere, which are, you may or may not be aware, made from rocks, stones that are up to 200 tons in size, weights that we would struggle with current equipment to move around. And these things are fitted together seamlessly, and they're not on the square. They kind of fit a little higgledy-piggledy, you might say, and they are so neatly fitting that you can't slide a cigarette paper between them. There's no mortar. And really, they have to be soft to be able to do that, or they simply couldn't be formed in that manner. So it's an amazing skill, and of course it was used to build the pyramids, and as I mentioned, it was used in the construction of the Gothic cathedral, so that's not understood today. So, you know, so much knowledge we've had in the past that has been lost, and in ways it's exciting to see some of the core knowledge beginning to reemerge, the kind of work that Meron Kesh, for example, has been bringing forth. Just extraordinary, just wonderful. May it all come forth into the public eye soon. Of course, he's now reached the point where some 60%, the government's representing 60% of the population of the world, have accepted the gift of his technology, but that doesn't mean it's in the public domain.
No.
Having it spoken about is a very different thing.
Well, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt what you were saying. I really chuckle when I hear the Egyptians talk about how they move these tons, these blocks that weigh tons, and they moved them with ropes with a whole bunch of people pulling on it.
Yeah, it's pretty bizarre.
I just think that's hilarious. And like, I was at Stonehenge, and if you see the size of those stones, you know, they say the same thing. They took bark from trees and wove ropes out of them, and they pulled these things great distances. figure that one.
Yeah, likely stuff.
Yeah. Well, Richard, we are right up to the end. Believe it or not.
I believe it.
Anyway, I've enjoyed...
Well, Carolyn, thank you for sharing a few more of your extraordinary stories and experiences and lifetimes. As I say occasionally, you recall readily maybe, I don't know, maybe 300 of your lifetimes. They just pour from you when the circumstance arises. It's just amazing to witness these things as they kind of pop out when the circumstances arise for it to be so. It's just amazing. And so thank you for sharing your extraordinary gift with people and a little more of your amazing story as you went through the process of preparing for this time.
And all I can say, Richard, is thank you for being my friend over so many lifetimes.
Well, I think it's been a pleasure. I can't remember.
Good night, Richard. And good night to all of you, our faithful friends. Till the next time. Bye for now.